Well, it's nice to have the rain finally out of here on this Tuesday afternoon. It's Jason Drive Time on the air. It's graduation week at the DeRusha household. Last kid graduating from high school. And that means that the next 3 months will be graduation party season. Is this peak pettiness or brilliant organization, Dan? My wife...
Do those things have to be mutually exclusive?
Absolutely not.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My wife has a spreadsheet that has everyone who is invited to Seth's graduation, the oldest, and what their gift was. So now, if we get invited, you take a little looky-loo at the old spreadsheet, see how it went.
That just seems like a marvel of efficiency to me.
It's very smart.
Right.
It's very smart.
I love it.
I like that it gives a factual check against my normal pettiness that I would have.
Sure.
We're like, well, it seems to me...
It's pettiness analytics.
Now, my parents do not need this spreadsheet. I got married, I don't know how many years ago, Dan. 27 years
ago? You ought to know how many years ago.
More than 25 years ago. And I think my parents still could quote, like, what various family members gave as a present. You got to be organized. You got to be organized. It's okay to be a little petty, too. Time for the DeRusha Hour News headlines. Let's do the lead.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the DeRusha Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And the lead story is the activity on Lake Street. Federal agents taking major action on East Lake Street and Bloomington Avenue, right outside Las Cuatras Milpas. The images from the scene have caused massive reaction. It's the lead story on the Star Tribune. Whenever you have federal agents right now in a time where, well, I don't know, is it on higher alert because federal agents are in front of a Mexican restaurant in a time where immigrants who are here illegally have been essentially put on notice? Maybe that led to higher tensions. But as you heard in Susie Jones's news, the FBI, the ATF, Homeland Security, we saw the scenes where you saw a huge number of very armed federal agents. Now, I would say, if you are carrying out a search warrant related to drug smuggling and money laundering, as Mayor Jacob Frey said it was about, and police also later confirmed with our newsroom that's what it was about, yeah, the cops are going to be heavily protected. They're going to have large guns. We need to be able to not freak out and start protesting whenever federal agents are doing their jobs. And that's sad. When you have ICE on the scene, visibly marked, immigration authorities, yeah, people have good reason then to be alarmed. It's still early. The narratives are all over the place. We don't quite know what the facts are. Within the last couple of minutes, the Lake Street Council sent a note out to supporters saying we still have many unanswered questions about why these agents surrounded our community, but extreme displays of armed law enforcement are deeply concerning and triggering for many individuals. We need to keep our community safe. We need to keep our law enforcement safe. But it is a time of unease and uncertainty, and we saw that on display today. Jim Marshall has died. The headline on the New York Times, Jim Marshall, Iron Man defensive end for the Vikings, dies at 87. Anyone who admired the Purple People Eaters admired Jim Marshall, but that was just part of his story. And our friend Pete Najarian is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline to talk a little bit more about Jim. Thanks for being with us, Pete. What a sad and tragic loss.
It really is. Although you have to look at it as an incredibly long life, especially for a football player. Yeah, 87 true. Years. It's a great run. It really yeah. is. And Jim, what a wonderful guy. I was lucky enough to get to know him. I grew up watching him after we moved from California to Minnesota. We were out there where now sits the Mall of America and watching a lot of those football games at Met Stadium. And, boy, he was a special guy. You know, he was such a great athlete, he was an influencer before the times of that we've got now as far as influencers. He was a guy that played the game the right way. Bud Grant absolutely loved him, which is why he was a captain for 14 years for the Vikings. But his ability to have the longevity to start all those games, you know, week after week after week and year after year, it really says a lot about who he is. And, you know, he'd been to 4 Super Bowls, all of that. But the Hall of Fame never really pulled the trigger. And, I will bet you there will come a day where they will. I think that is one of those where they looked past this for too long. But great guy.
Pete,
saw him a couple of years ago.
Oh, you yeah. did. You did. Mm-hmm. I think people look at Alan Page and Carl Eller as sort of the – because they had the stats in yeah. that People Eaters time. And sacks, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't realize that the mm-hmm. NFL didn't – like stats wasn't – sacks wasn't a stat. It wasn't a thing until like the early 80s, I think.
No, you're exactly right. And you'd have to go back and go through all that film. I think with AI, that's something we'll probably do someday.
Well, I read that Pro Football Reference went back to 1960 and analyzed kind of game stats. And they estimated that if there were a stat that Jim Marshall would have had 130 sacks in his career.
That's not bad.
It would have been 22nd in NFL history. I mean, now... Eller, Carl had 133, but Marshall also had that NFL record for fumble recoveries with 29. So yeah. you think about that in that time, in that era, the physicality was different. The training was mm-hmm. different. Just to me, it's sort of mind blowing.
Yeah. And even think about this. They didn't throw the ball as much either. Right.
Yeah,
and so the fact that right. when you think about that, how about those stats actually would have been even higher had they huh. thrown at the kind of rate that we have now. I mean, it's so great football players. I got a chance to get to know him a little bit even closer when I was a high school kid. Matt Blair was a great outside linebacker for the Vikings for a long time.
Yeah.
And he put on a free for anybody in Minneapolis. We could go there for free at North High School. So we did.
Right.
And it was great. He brought in celebrity football players from all over the country, including people like Jim Marshall. And what a great opportunity. We knew it at the time, but I think looking back, we knew it, but we didn't really realize how incredible that whole experience was. We had guys from the Chargers and guys from the Jets and guys from whoever they could bring out there. Matt Blair did a great job getting them there, and it was a lot of fun. Matter of fact, just a couple of years ago, I was out to eat at J.D. Hoyt's, and who's sitting right next to me but Jim Marshall. And I introduced him to my wife and told her all about him and the stories. And, gosh, he's just a great guy. Always had a magical smile and all of those kind of things. And still involved with the Vikings to some degree. He'd go out there once in a while to watch something. But just a, you know, a great person. Really, really was.
Pete Najarian, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for visiting with us.
Absolutely. Take care, Jim.
Jim Marshall's wife said that he had been hospitalized for a long time. He was 87, died right here in Minneapolis. Making news nationally right now is the bromance over. Elon Musk absolutely destroying the big beautiful bill of Donald Trump.
I think a bill can be big or it can be beautiful. But I don't know if it could be both.
I mean, you got to pick one. You got to pick one. And today on X, in a break with Donald Trump, Elon Musk just, he kind of was like, I just can't do it anymore. He called the bill an abomination, a disgusting abomination. It's pretty amazing, right? Because these two were absolutely in lockstep for quite a while. And then today at 12:31 p.m. our time, the Musk bomb, the tweet, this massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination. Shame on those who voted for it. You know you did wrong. You know it. This is very interesting. This sort of separation that we've seen of Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Musk just left the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. Republicans in the Senate are starting work just this week on trying to take a look at this House bill and work their way through this multi-trillion dollar package of tax and spending cuts. Only three Republicans can bail out. Otherwise, this thing won't pass. Now, the Trump administration was asked about this today, and they said, look, we know how Elon feels about this bill. We've heard about it. But sometimes some reality has to come into play. The Congressional Budget Office had estimated that this bill, the big, beautiful bill, could add $2.3 trillion to the deficit over a decade. Now, Republicans, including Senate Majority Leader John Thune, say that doesn't account for any economic growth that you might get as a result of the policy changes in the bill. CBO is looking at that. We'll see in the coming days what that is. But a lot of Republicans, including Wisconsin's Ron Johnson, have stood up and said, we're not into this bill. And I think I saw Amy Klobuchar tweet earlier today that finally there is something that she and Elon Musk agree on. That is the D Rush Hour news headline. Amy Klobuchar, pretty good. Like, that's a pretty good. Yeah. Finally, I wasn't making this up. Finally, something Elon and I agree on. Page two coming up in just a moment of the D Rush Hour news headlines. We'll talk about Trump, the tweeter in chief. We'll talk about Lilo and Stitch, too. How about this? The surprise hit of the summer, Lilo and Stitch, coming up. All right, D-Rush Hour news headlines, page two, 525 on this Tuesday afternoon. We get started with Donald Trump's online posting frenzy. I thought this story in the Washington Post was fascinating. 2,262 truths in 132 days. Yeah. It's a lot. There were lots of nuggets in this story that surprised me, the Washington Post. As of Sunday, Donald Trump had posted 2,262 times to True Social. More than three times the number of tweets he sent during that same period of time during his first presidency. The data portrays an influencer in chief. That's pretty good. The heightened volume, they say, is not just Trump's work alone. He has a team of aides who help him post throughout the day. So some of this is fascinating, and some of this has been documented in The Art of the Surge, which was a documentary during the campaign. So Trump will dictate, because I always wonder this, when you have someone famous and there's no one more famous than the president of the United States, are they posting their own stuff? Does it go through someone? Trump dictates True Social posts to Dan Scavino and another aide, Natalie Harp, who they like type it up and off it goes. But often Trump posts his messages himself, surprising his staff in the middle of the night and early in the morning when he is watching the news on TV. I do the same thing. There are times late at night where my staff, a.k.a. really my boss, Alyssa, is like, put the Twitter down. You're in no shape But when I post ridiculous takes at 11 o'clock at night, so what? When Donald Trump posts ridiculous takes at 2 in the morning, then the staff has to go do it the next day. Just amazing. Lilo and Stitch, perhaps the surprise movie of the spring.
We have apprehended a dangerous experiment. Where is he?
He escaped.
He is trying to find the police cruisers.
He took the red one.
New York Times reporting on this amazing success, Lilo and Stitch. Lilo and Stitch, probably the forgotten Disney stars. My old college roommate, Brooks Barnes, with this story in the New York Times. You know, you look at the original movie, ticket sales were, got a couple direct-to-video sequels, a TV cartoon in the 2000, a sort of lame Disney World ride opened in 2004 and closed in 2018. They spent about $100 million on this. Originally, it was going to be a straight-to-streaming release. But the new/old CEO of Disney said, no, we make movies. They go in the theater. It's made $610 million worldwide after 10 days in theaters. Crazy. They're thinking it might be a billion-dollar movie. Japan is the question. Like, will they love it? But this is sort of a combination of nostalgia and brilliant marketing. The turning point, reports the Times, was a Super Bowl stunt orchestrated by Disney marketers that found Stitch breaking onto the field shortly after the coin toss, and the stadium staff couldn't capture it. So that was what started it, and now it might make $1 billion. Just crazy. Nostalgia, nostalgia, nostalgia. That is the D-Rush Hour News headlines here on CCO. It's 5:30. We had two sort of digital stories for you there in the D-Rush Hour News headlines. Perfect segue into Greg Swan explaining the internet. Will we need to get our eyes scanned to prove that we are human? That and more with Greg in just a minute here on CCO.